lining up in man-to-man for football coverage. It's Football Central with Vic Nizar and Jamie Dodd.
To you, week 7 in the books. You know, Football Central will have you covered, though. It's Vic Nizar and Katie Caldwell, who's filling in for Jamie Dodd this week as he takes some much-deserved time away. Katie, what's going on? Did you enjoy the Monday Night Football game?
I surprisingly did, and I also just had to laugh
on.
At the... Okay, I that's why I said surprisingly, and we will get into that, Vic. Don't jump on me yet. I just had to laugh at the intro saying we're going man to man, and then a woman jumps in here. I'm like, hey guys, just kidding, it's me.
It's no, man to man coverage. Come on.
Heck yeah. No, the biggest takeaway that I had from that game, it was better than I thought, kind of surprisingly, but I think that was more indicative of where those teams are at than their records showed. And that's what I was looking for. I just wanted to see where those two teams were at, and I found out.
Well, it kind of goes to what we were talking about yesterday, how some teams are able to live with the margin of error, right? And the Bears, Johnny Hecker was the MVP of that game, right?
He kept
hitting the Bears deep in their own zone. And you just saw it. Like, when the Bears don't have optimal scenarios where we're – they can maybe go 40 yards to get into field goal range or you know, threaten for touchdowns, then okay, they're functional. But when you consistently force them to go 90 plus yards, it's going to be a real problem for this offense. Like, yesterday was the first time they completed a pass over 40 yards. That's stunning. We are in week 7. You know, for you not to fluke into one of those plays is really poor in an era when it's easier than ever to get, you know, pass interference calls and get down the field and you know, go through the middle of the field unaccosted because of illegal contact, defensive holding, pass interference. It's easier than ever to get chunk plays. And this Bears offense with a head coach and a good offensive mind. Like, I'm a big Matt Nagy fan. I don't necessarily know that they've got the right pieces around him to succeed as far as on-the-field personnel, but I'm a big Matt Nagy fan. For that offense to not get 40 yards on a play until week 7 is a big problem.
Before we move on, I have to address the Johnny Hecker situation. I just love any game where the storyline heavily centers around a punter. And I'm not being facetious. I mean that so sincerely. He was so happy. And that was just so, so excellent. Bringing up Matt Nagy, I think last night was a game where we were reminded that Sean McVay is an exceptional offensive mind. And I think that he big time out coached Matt Nagy. I don't know. That's just a big takeaway that I had from it.
When you're consistently playing from like the 40-yard line, right? It's
yeah.
It was easier for Sean McVay to play to his offense than it was for Matt Nagy to play to his. Right?
Well, and their defense did no favors with all of the penalties they got. Like, Akeem Hicks alone, did he have 3 or 4?
I lost count.
Oh God! Yeah, exactly. He's by the end, I think he was laughing at it because it was so many. Yeah.
The running game for the Rams just got going because they were, you know, in the middle of the field and able to play their offense, whereas the Bears were, hey, can we just get it to the 20-yard line and punt over and over again? And eventually, it was kind of like a wave game, right? It slowly eroded little by little, and eventually the shoreline has just gone, and the shoreline in this case is the defensive line for the Bears, and Henderson, Brown are just running through these open gaps and able to get the edge consistently, because it's hard to repeatedly give that much effort for the Bears defense, who I thought did a good job till about what midway through the third, and then it just became way too difficult. I think at one point I looked, it was about a 24 play discrepancy between how many the Rams had run versus how many the Bears had run. And when you're that fatigued, when you're that downtrodden, you just get overcome by the wave of constant running.
Well, and if we're speaking about the Rams run game, I want to talk about that one drive where Malcolm Brown ended up scoring the touchdown. The amount of time, do you know which play I'm talking about? They go up and it looked like he was about to get tackled. And then every single player on the field is just moving as a unit. And they he just kept moving forward. And then the announcers are going, okay, he's down. No, he's not down. They're still going. And they pushed it all the way almost till the end zone. I was gasping. I couldn't believe it. That was one where I go, okay, I see exactly what's happening. That was one of the moments of the game where I say, okay. And then the other big one was probably the pick in the end zone. That I think it was in the third quarter. That was it for me, where you go, Nick Foles, what you doing?
Yeah, the Bears, I thought it was a decent matchup for them defensively, and it was for a while, and then the dam just bursts. But I thought they'd be more functional in that game, and it just never came to fruition. And you see every Bears fan right now. I've seen this a lot on Twitter. If you just kind of search through Bears hashtags or something like that, or Bears reporters retweeting stuff, that Bears fans just want to see, for once in their life, like an average offense, right?
For once.
Like, think about it. If you're 40 years old, you haven't really seen an average Bears offense in your lifetime. It's stunning. Just somehow it goes to the issue of, like, it's so hard to find a franchise QB. It's so hard to find a functional QB. The Bears have had Jay Cutler, but, you know, not drafted to them. And we saw how that kind of ended as well. But he's easily the best QB they've had in some time. Like, the Bears fans would probably kill right now for a Ryan Tannehill, Josh Allen type of, like, this is our guy. We're stuck with him. We're going to stick it through with him for 6 years. And it was supposed to be Mitchell Trubisky, but that failed almost immediately. And they just haven't had that. I'm sure they would take like Andrew Luck's career. Be like, hey, we're going to lose this guy because of injuries. I'm sorry to bring this up. I know you're, you know, Colts fan, but, like, I'm sure they just even love that. Like, a short peak.
Even, like you said, even just to just have the short burst of having an elite quarterback, because the Bears of all teams, when you're looking at that Patrick Mahomes draft, they're one of the ones that have the big asterisks that we always talk about of, imagine trading up for Mitch Trubisky, whichever. But every season that goes past that, and you don't want to call it a mistake because it's hindsight, whichever, but that mistake is just so much more glaring as we see their defense continuing to build, but they just can't find anything on offense. And then last night, Allen Robinson goes down, and I got the notification today that he's questionable. It's like, if there's one piece you can't afford to lose right now, it's Allen Robinson. He's been a bit of a bright spot. He's been a bit inconsistent, but yeah, that whole offense, I was watching that last night just going, oh, okay, they're 5-2 now. All right. Even that, it's just, yeah, exactly.
And the worst is they have 5 wins. They're kind of in that purgatory of, well, they're not so bad that they're going to easily solve this QB problem.
They can't even tank for Trevor properly.
Yeah, right? So they can't even do that. And then you're going to have to go with a situation like Houston of, if we want to move up, we're going to have to give up this first, a future first, a next year's first. And then in 2 years, you don't have any draft capital to actually improve the rest of your team. So they are in a tough spot if they don't even make the playoffs. And generally speaking, I'm pro, like, go to the playoffs, it's better, all that sort of stuff. But they are in that middle purgatory ground where they get this loss and they might just lose some more.
What are your odds of Mitchell Trubisky seeing another snap this season for the Bears?
Oh, like 4%?
Okay. I was going to say 10, but I like 4.
Like, really low, really low. You know what? I'll go to where he was drafted. I'll go 2%. Oh.
So you traded savvy up to the 2%, I see.
Yes. 650, text coming in here, which, by the way, you can also chime in on the show. Bears should have went for Jameis Winston. Like, yeah, right? At least that explores an upside that might be possible. Because it ain't it with Nick Foles, it ain't it with Mitch Trubisky, and the Bears, once again, are just going to have a league average, or, you know, below average offense. Let's get to the rest of Week 7. Something we wanted to do yesterday, and we'll get to some news and notes today, Dez Bryant, Quinnen Williams, all that sort of stuff, we'll do that, plus our power rankings, our Super Bowl 7 Jamie and I started last week, and Katie and I will do this week. And we'll do this every Tuesday of just who do you feels like can win a Super Bowl? To me, it's always the seven teams that have a chance, and we'll narrow that down later on in the show. But now that week seven's in the books, looking back at it, Katie, what is the most surprising result to you?
So the most surprising thing for me, and I know this probably sounds obvious, but I think I needed to see it with my own two eyes. The Patriots are not special anymore. They just aren't. Typically, I feel like a lot of us as sports fans have lived in this world where you're playing against the Patriots, especially in the playoffs, and you can be up by however many points you want to be. And now it kind of feels like it's a Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs situation, but you can't count them out. It's Bill Belichick, it's Tom Brady, and I understand he's not there this season, but there's still a little bit of, okay, you've still got Bill Belichick and you've got Josh McDaniels, and I understand players are opting out, but the first game that we saw with Cam and the Seahawks, I thought Cam was going to be it. It was okay. And I think now looking back, that's more indicative of the Seahawks defense. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, I'm looking at, okay, Cam's playing pretty well. They've got offense. Their defense is Bill Belichick led. And I'm kind of thinking they are this special of an organization. And I think that was my first moment of, okay, this is done. They just aren't special anymore.
I still think the organization as a whole is special.
Oh, yes.
They'll always, like, even right now, I still think they'll get 7-8 wins. Just because they're so much smarter than a lot of teams. Teams are just going to make mistakes versus them. They'll find their way to 7-8. To be honest, maybe even 9 wins. Do they feel threatening to you? That's exactly the bigger question. And at no point do I really feel that way now about the New England Patriots. Some of the mystique has been stripped away. Mm-hmm. And that big win by the 49ers is an indication, okay, that they can problem solve, right? Their mm-hmm. offense will always be fine. But the Patriots just have a dearth of just playmakers on both sides of the ball. And part of it is because, you know, guys have opted out and are not playing this year. Like, they'll come back at some point next year, and you'll see the talent differential improve when those guys come back. But right now, it just feels like the Patriots have too many obstacles that Cam Newton can't overcome. And whether he's injured or whatever it is, it just, they need him to play perfect. When you throw 3 interceptions, mm-hmm. you see a real, snowball start to develop with all their issues, that you just can't overcome all of these issues at once.
Well, and they need him to play perfect, and he's not even playing well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, look at the discrepancy there.
My most surprising result, it doesn't always have to be an upset. It doesn't have to be a blowout. My most surprising result was the Bills only winning by 8 over the Jets.
Yes!
Because, like, Josh Allen has had great success in the red zone in his career. And seeing what happened and their struggles, they had no problem getting to the red zone. They had problem finishing off drives. And I was just stunned at how unsuccessful they looked. And I get it. It's the Jets. Maybe you're just not up for it and you're not motivated. You just kind of coast through and you get your win. But you still should have been able to put the hammer down a little bit more. So the thing that surprised me is, okay, is this level of engagement, is this something that we can see switch off again come at critical times? Or when you're talking about that culture of your franchise, and I think, Sean McDermott's a really good coach, but it is one of those things that, hey, can we get engaged for a quarter here and finish this off properly? Because at some point, we're going to need to be able to flip a switch.
Well, and what you were saying earlier about sometimes you can look at the schedule and go, oh, we can kind of take the day off or whichever. Elite teams just don't do that. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at next week, the Chiefs are playing the Jets, and the spread on that has to be at least 50 by now, because I just compare the two. And with what the Bills have on paper, that never in any world should have been that close. And I understand it. You're looking at the Jets. It's not a super huge threatening matchup. But then I look at what the Chiefs will probably do this weekend, and I just feel like it's going to be night and day. The Jets look like they got this strange boost of confidence because they're playing the Bills, and the Bills were in Josh Allen was an MVP conversation up until 3 weeks ago.
I'm not even saying like you had to give 60 minutes effort, right?
No, right.
I get it's not the Super Bowl, but if they play for basically a quarter, the game's over.
They looked uninspired almost the whole time.
It just solve that problem is basically what surprised me of if you want to take this next step to be in that conversation where you're talking about the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Ravens of the world, hammer these guys just for a quarter. It would have been over. And that to me was something that was really surprising. 650, if you want to share your thoughts on the most surprising result of the week. But we did want to get to some news and notes as well while we got here on Football Central, Bick Nizar and Katie Caldwell. So Dez Bryant is back. You can chuck the X up. He's back with the Baltimore Ravens, ending up on their practice squad, report from Ian Rappaport. And we kind of heard the buzz about that in the last week. Does this register at all? Like, does this move the needle at all for you?
Yeah, honestly, not really. I think he's an incredible player. I don't know if he is someone that comes in as an immediate impact player. The Ravens are just, they're so well-rounded, but to have him in the building and be a part of the organization, and then however they choose to use him, I think he will be a super valuable asset. I'm not sure quite where he's going to land and where he's going to be, but just to have him in the building, I think that's such a huge move. He can't just be sitting at home. He's 31, I think, which, there's a lot that he can still bring to a team. And I'm just happy to see him back in the league. He's someone that I've always cheered for, and he deserves it.
32nd birthday next Wednesday, actually.
Okay.
But you can see the impact he has on players. Like, even when he signed with the Saints, he didn't play with the Saints, but he got hurt. And all the players were pretty sad about it. They're like, hey, this guy's hurt. He was barely their teammate. And he does have that aura about him. What it does say to me, though, is the Ravens' passing offense is a bit of a problem. And not that I think he's going to solve it. It's just like Marquise Brown's the really only talent at wide receiver that this team has. Mark Andrews, obviously, is great. But at wide receiver, like, Willie Snead's okay. Miles Boykin hasn't become what they thought. Devin Duvernay is a rookie. Maybe that comes to fruition over time. He's got a lot of speed, receiver out of Texas, but it's still going to take some time. But on the outside, they've got real problems. And the thing with Dez Bryant is I don't know where he's at athletically, all that sort of stuff, but he's still a professional wide receiver. He knows how to do a handful of routes, and because he's so big, because he's so aware of his body positioning, he'll be able to catch a couple of passes. But it does speak to where the Ravens are at with their wide receivers, that this is a bigger problem than I think has been given credit to.
Well, I think you could look at it that way as a bigger problem, or it could just be bringing in an extra piece just to have more flexibility. I think you think they're a bigger problem than I am. I think Lamar actually doesn't – I think his rushing is elite. He looks a little bit off in his passing. Is that crazy to say?
No, I think that's something that goes back to last year too, right? Like, yeah. I know he won MVP, but it was easier for them to pass in advantageous scenarios, and those just aren't getting created with us enough frequency this year, because there's going to be regression to his the overall explosiveness to this offense. And now it brings them a bit more versatility, like a different body type.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be Marquise Brown going down the field or Nick Boyle or Mark Andrews kind of going up the seam. They can find different ways to get their pass catchers the ball with a Dez Bryant. Now, how much production he actually has to be determined. I could see him playing kind of the Josh Gordon role in Seattle last year, where it's like, Josh, a random third down, we're going to need you. Just run a slant. Mm-hmm. We'll throw it to you. Just catch it. Convert the first down. That's it.
But, well, like we talked about, that's the benefit you see.
Yeah, but there's so much Ravens behind the need scenes that. Too. Like, the Ravens badly need that of a guy who can just help them convert and keep the chains moving. That's right. The one thing that they don't really have in the roster. And they can be explosive with Lamar, and J.K. Dobbins is slowly starting to show he's got a bit more pop now that he's getting a bigger opportunity. But they're so close to breaking through to be that elite, elite, elite team, like number one in power rankings and the kind of the bullies of the AFC. And I don't know if Dez Bryant solves it, but that type of player solves it.
I think that's a good way of putting it. But we don't know. Who knows if in a few months from now we're revisiting this conversation and he ends up slotting in and blowing right up. That's what's so interesting about this situation is I could see him having an impact, but I just don't know which way it's going to be yet.
Yeah. And if this is something that they revisit, not bringing in him back, but you know, come draft time, come free agency, is this something that they try to sort out? It's like, hey, we need one more decent to stud receiver to help take this offense to the next level. Because no one disputes how good this Ravens team should be talent-wise. To really tap into that next step and really explore Lamar Jackson's ceiling and see that growth, they might need one more awesome piece on that offense. The other news coming out today, and we've seen kind of differing reports of it, but it's the New York Football Jets. Their defensive tackle, Quinnen Williams, who was a high draft pick last year. Rumors coming out of the New York Post, I believe, saying that could be had by a trade prior to the deadline. What's stunning about this is it's been 20 games. It's been 20 games that they've gotten out of Quinnen Williams. He's had a couple of off-field incidents that, you know, he's playing now. It's, you know, from the league's eyes that it's been solved. But if you're in the Jets scenario and you can move off of him, is this something that you would explore? Me personally, I think that's a star player that you just drafted who you can't pin anything on him as far as what's happened so far with the Jets. A defensive tackle can only do so much.
See, and to me, this isn't as much about Quinnen Williams as it is just about the deep-seated fundamental issues that is that organization. And it hasn't just been this year. It's been for a long time now. But I'm at the point with the Jets where I look at them and there's just no redeeming factor where my view is just burn every single thing to the ground and build it back up. I don't think anyone should be safe there, except seemingly Adam Gase is, which blows my mind, but that's a whole different conversation. With him, I just think, I don't even have an answer because there are so many issues with that team that I just don't even know where to start. I think they just need a complete overhaul and build it back up. I think the longer Sam Darnold stays there, the worse that is for his career. And I look at someone like Williams and Happy Adams. So there's just all of these fundamental issues with the Jets that I think if other teams should capitalize on it, he could fit in on almost every NFL team. They could use him.
So the report was from the New York Daily News. It was from Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News. And the report basically says, the Jets have been proactive in attempting to get more draft capital in exchange for the third overall pick of the 2019 draft. It won't require a first-round pick in return, according to sources. Now, some other reporters out of New York saying they haven't been shopping him. Quinnen Williams also tweeted out at his agent, just say like, good morning, right?
So laughing face.
Yeah, it's basically throwing a bit more gasoline on the fire. But it's going to require a lot to get him. I know there was some thought of, oh, it could be a day three pick. No one's trading a player that's on a cost control contract that's so young that can, you know, play in a rather marquee position. We know how important it is to win in the trenches. It's going to require at least a high second, first round pick, I would assume. And if that doesn't happen, then okay, bigger questions need to be asked about why the player is available. What are the Jets doing? Should Joe Douglas even have a job? Like, all these questions arise. But my expectation is a guy in the second year of his rookie contract, it should cost you a first round pick and potentially more.
I think it should too, but I think this kind of goes back to the Jamal Adams conversations we were having a few months ago of how do you value draft picks? How do you value players? Are you drafting someone that you hope can turn into this player? Like, I don't trust the Jets to do anything with their picks ever. I don't know if you can tell, I have zero faith or trust in the Jets by now. But if I'm another team, I'm okay with giving up, because you're right, there are going to have to be some pretty high picks that you give for him. I'm willing to do that for a player like Quinnen Williams, but that's
absolutely no, absolutely. It's he and Nick Bosa last year were neck and neck as far as who the most impressive draft prospects were. And if he's available, there is an element of like, I'll pay the cost to get him. We'll get into more thoughts as well. A couple of depth chart questions. I know there's a lot of people wondering about the Seahawks backfield and the 49ers backfield. We'll get into that, plus some power rankings and a couple other news and notes as well here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Football Central with Vic Nizar and Jamie Dodd.
Vic Nizar and Katie Caldwell this week on Football Central. Jamie Dodd away this week. And we did this last week. We got some people mad. You know, Katie, you know what happens when you make a list. People are going to get mad. They're like, well, how come my team didn't make your power rankings? What's going on there?
Well, sir, you cheer for the Los Angeles Rams. They didn't make my seven. I'm sorry.
Be better.
Pick a better team.
So here's how it goes. These are the definitive Football Central power rankings. Each of us have seven teams that we believe, hey, these seven can win the Super Bowl. It's the elite group, right? Like, anybody can get in the club. And that's the NFL. Like, you're in the club. You're one of the people in. But the VIPs, how do you get into that elite group? So let's go through this. Let's start at seven. Katie, and we'll do this in order. Who to you is your seventh team that can actually win a Super Bowl?
Ooh, I didn't know we were going to 7-1. This is exciting. I have the Titans coming in at seven.
Okay. So we're already different.
Okay.
My number one team that I've actually dropped down, they were previously, I think, five. They're down to seven now, is the Buffalo Bills. They've got a lot of mobility to go upwards, obviously, because it is the Jets game. What your motivations, I get it. But this is a bit of a worrying trend now with the Bills for 3 weeks here, that they play the Chiefs, they lose. They play the Titans, they lose. And then it's a rather uninspiring performance versus the Jets. And now this is a bigger body of work. And I say, even though you won, I'm still downgrading you.
That's exactly why I have them as my outside looking in teams. I have them I think I have them sitting at about eight or nine.
Okay, so I think if you missed it last week, I think I already know the team that you have in that I have out. I'm going to assume it's the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. You don't have the Packers in? Okay, we'll get to that.
No, yeah, we'll get to that. So that's my number seven team. My number six team was your number seven team. So you had the Tennessee Titans. I've got them at number six.
Okay.
Just because I downgraded the Bills, someone had to move up. I didn't necessarily change my grade on the Titans. It's just their rank in the order of where they are changed.
I look at the Titans like you do, and I know we're not in the same camp as everyone else with this. There are a lot of people that will start to place them in the 3-4-5 range, and I just don't see it. Like, I get Ryan Tannehill. He looks just as good as last season, which I will admit I thought was a total fluke and in no way sustainable. But it's their consistency for me. They're tough. They're resilient. They love to win right at the end of the game, kind of a la Seahawks. But their consistency just isn't there for me where I would put them any higher than this.
Yeah, and they finally played a big team, right? They exactly. played the Steelers, and we saw what happened. And I kind of like what we talked about yesterday, I just feel like there might be a cap to them. And look, I put them number six. That's very elite. We're talking about they can win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And yet people still feel like, oh, you're not giving them enough credit. I'm saying they can win a Super Bowl.
We are nitpicking here, people.
It's giving them a lot of credit. But this is what you do. You do have to split hairs at this level, right? When you're talking about the elite of the elite, you've got to find tiny differences that separate them. And right now, anytime the Titans go up against elite competition, they don't show up as well. That offense doesn't look as smooth. And Ryan Tannehill, he's putting up great numbers, but as far as functionality, you've got to marry the numbers with the game itself. And at times, it doesn't look like it's as smooth as it should be with Ryan Tannehill. Who's your number six team?
My number six, I have the Green Bay Packers. I think I'm looking at the one game against the Bucks being as more of an anomaly than the last game, them being amazing. I think that was just kind of their one exception. I think that was a huge get right game against Houston. We talked about this yesterday. Aaron Rodgers to Davante Adams is just a play I can watch again and again and again. And, oh, I wanted to bring this up too. Remember the game against the Bucks where Rodgers ran in the TD and then he did his Hingle McCringleberry dance?
Yes.
So I had tweeted out that he put a curse on him because after that, he went completely off the rails. Mm-hmm. My theory is the curse has since been removed and he's back in action. He's going to be back in the MVP talks before we know it.
A temporary hex.
Absolutely. It was very distinct, the timing of it, and that is all Mr. McCringleberry, and now he should be good.
My thing with the Packers is what I talked about last week, and it was the thing I confirmed last week, is they're just kind of soft. They're just kind of soft. That you see them when they go up against teams that are going to win in the trenches and just play with a bit more physicality, they kind of just crumble. And I don't know if I can take them to win in the playoffs in January when it gets tough, man. You're going to play against elite teams all the time. And more importantly, you're going to play teams with a lot of physicality. And the teams that I have, we'll go through them. You look at these seven teams and they all kind of play bully ball. And I think that really matters come January. Yes, you need skilled players, of course, but every one of these teams to me can win in the trenches and dominate. And going back to San Fran last year, even going back to times they've played Seattle, just any time they play a team that wants to push them around, it's as if the Packers let them push them around. And come playoff time, you got to be willing to overcome that. And I just haven't seen that from the Packers. That's why I can't put them in this select group.
See, and I'm in a world right now of kind of eating my words from last year because I was one of many, many, many people saying they were the softest 13-3 I'd ever seen as a playoff team. And I still kind of stand by that a bit, but this year I'm looking at them going, okay, no, I'm actually starting to see it. And I understand when they're up in the trenches, they're not going to bully you around. But in a season like this, where there's so many injuries across the entire league, maybe this is the season where that's beneficial to them, where they're not playing quite as hard. But then when you go into the playoffs, you have three quarters of your roster rather than a third.
I'm willing. Look, my mind's open on them, right? I know I just said I confirmed some things on them, but they do play the 49ers. They do play the Colts. They do play the Titans, and they do play the Bears twice. That's all still coming up. But if they show up in those games and not even just, oh, okay, we won, but we went our way. Like, I want to see some more physicality out of that team. And if they show that, I will change my mind and include them in this group. And until that happens, like beating up on the Texans is not changing my mind. Beating up on the Falcons is not changing my mind. The Lions or the Vikings, that's not really changing my mind. I want to see them go against the 49ers. I want to see them against the Colts. I want to see them against the Bears. I want to see what happens in those games. And if they can play big in the trenches and Aaron Rodgers doesn't, you know, one thing goes wrong and suddenly he's, you know, a shell of himself, I want to see what happens in those games before I start including them. Let's keep it moving here. Your number five team.
My number five, I have the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay, so I've downgraded them as well. They were my number two team last week. But
where are they sitting for you now?
Higher than five, so we'll get to them in just a minute. My number five is the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
Which is kind of what we were just talking about, that they're knocking on the door of like that elite of the elite. They're right there, and maybe Dez Bryant unlocks it, maybe he doesn't, but until this offense gets right, they're going to be just behind everyone. And I think they are on the precipice of getting it all right, and they've got a lot of upside as far as upward mobility of becoming, you know, what we think they can be. But until we see the consistently explosive version of this offense, I can't put them higher than five.
For me, I think their big upgrade to their defense could have a trickle effect onto the confidence of their offense. Adding Yannick Ngakoue is such a huge piece of that defense, especially with his former teammate, Calais Campbell. Mm-hmm. They are bringing Saxonville to Baltimore, baby. And I love that. I think that's just going to have such an effect on their offense. And I think Lamar is going to figure it out. Like we talked about earlier, I think he's taken a bit of a step back in his passing game, but With Dez Bryant in there, hopefully moving those pieces around, seeing what that looks like, I think building along their already elite defense is going to do nothing but good things for their offense too. So I think the Ravens are just going to keep going up in the power rankings.
Yeah, making a strength stronger is always a good thing. We see like Lev Bell ending up in the Chiefs. It's not a bad thing to get Yannick Ngakoue in, obviously. It just, to me, the thing that has to get solved is the offense. And the passing offense just needs to be a bit smoother. They can be hot as hot and cold as cold. It needs to be a bit smoother. And when they figure that out, then we'll see them in my top four. So who's number four for you then?
Number four, I have the Ravens.
Okay, so we'll just go right past it. I've got the Seattle Seahawks here at four. I've got these next three teams with the same grade, but just the way this is slotted out, the Seahawks land at four for me. Mainly because, okay, the defense, obviously a major issue. I didn't downgrade them a lot based on that performance because of what we talked about yesterday. They did make stops, right? They had that fourth down stop. They did generate two other turnovers. They did get that field goal stop that they end up taking a penalty on. I'm not going to assume that there's always going to be a penalty on that play, right? So I did drop them a bit, but they do wind up at four for me just because I do think there's still a lot of upside. If they get healthier, they get Jamal Adams back. For me, they could be right back in the top two or top three.
Yeah, and when I compare them against my top teams, I just can't really justify putting them ahead with that. Their glaring lack of pass rush is something I can't keep moving them up until that is addressed. And their run game needs improvement. And then now with Carson injured, with Hyde injured, we're just bringing in guys that sound like DJ Khaled, except it's DJ Dallas.
I mean, hey now.
No, I'm actually a pretty big DJ Dallas fan. Love his name. I hear DJ Khaled saying it in my head every time I hear or read his name.
Yeah, another one.
Another one. Yeah. Isn't that the story of the Seahawks running backs going down? But yeah, as long as you have Russ and you have DK and Tyler Lockett playing out of their minds like they are, they will continue to be in my seven. It's just no doubt about it. But it's the defense, like we talked about yesterday, they made some big plays, but I don't think I trust the defense overall as much as maybe you do. There was a lot of bad things they did too. Kyler Murray dropped back, 48, 50 times? They didn't get to him. So there's this huge glaring hole on defense that I'm hoping when Jamal Adams comes back, a lot of that is addressed, but he's only one man. He can only do so much.
650, 650. I just saw a text line. Why don't the Canucks make your power rankings? I'm triggered. That's a great text. Sign your text. We'd love to give you credit for the good ones.
Yeah.
So if I've done the math right here, I think we have the same three teams in our top three.
I hope so.
Chiefs, Buccaneers, Steelers, right?
Oh, I was going to say Bears, Rams, and 49ers. Yeah.
Stop it. All right.
Yeah, of course we have the same three.
Okay. So I've got the Steelers at three. And again, they've got a similar grade as the Seahawks, but I just have them ahead. I've got the Steelers at three, the Buccaneers at two.
I switched the Bucs and Steelers around about three times. So I have the Bucs sitting
end up at 12:43?
I have them sitting at three.
Okay.
But now that we're here and we're live, I'm still not confident. I'll probably change it even more throughout the day after we're on air, and it doesn't mean anything, but to me it means everything. Yeah, I have the Bucs at three.
No, this is final. This is your one and only take you're allowed. You can't change it. These two teams kind of feel a bit similar to me. I kind of feel like this is as high as the Steelers can go, whereas the Bucs can go higher, but right now where they are, I kind of feel like these three teams are the true bullies of the NFL. Like these three are the ones that are going to punch you in the face. And what are you going to do to come back? Because the Steelers beating up on the Titans, that's an impressive win to do it the way they did. Because they took out a big lead in that game.
They sure did. No, the Steelers, we talked about this yesterday. They are just so complete across the whole board, and their defense has just been the backbone of that team. Like, you saw it in the first half. I'll give them a bit of a pass for the second half. Not every team can be perfect in every single game and every single week, but they can single-handedly just shut down a run game. And when you're playing Derrick Henry, I like that in a team. Like, if I'm building a defense, they're the blueprint that I'm looking at for what you need to put together. Like, they've put them in as position where Big Ben doesn't need to be that spectacular. Mm-hmm. And then they are getting offense from a bunch of different guys as well. It's just, they're so complete, and the way it's coming together is just, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I've got them at number three, Bucs at two, and obviously we're both saying Chiefs number one just because of Patrick Mahomes. It's so tough, right? Like,
but then it's everyone around them. It's like their defense is making plays. Special teams is unbelievable. It's like I look at them and just go, it's not even fair, but it's so fun. Like, how can you not cheer for Patty?
I'm at a stage where it's basically like until they get knocked off, they're probably going to be number one. Right. Until we see like a real loss. I know they lost big to the Raiders, but until something big happens and it's obvious to knock them down, they're still a little bit of a cut above everyone else. But those are our Super Bowl seven. We between the two of us, we had eight teams. But it's funny that we look at that and we got the right three, the final three, all the same. And it's kind of the way it's trending right now.
It is, and it's so funny because think about what the talk was the whole offseason when we're talking, and I know Patrick Mahomes is number one, but we're talking about the fast, mobile quarterbacks, the rushing QBs. Yeah. Who do we have at two and three?
Brady and Roethlisberger. Now, look, it's fair to wonder. It's like, hey, are those guys going to win outside in the cold in January? Like, that's fair to wonder.
For sure. They're 100 years old together. But
right now, as of October 27th, to me, the Bucs are the best team in the NFC. And the NFC, the seeding might not go that way, but the NFC kind of has to go through them. And if Tampa Bay has to go through Lambeau, that's kind of interesting. If Tampa Bay has to come to Seattle, that's kind of interesting. But if someone's got to go to Tampa Bay in warm Florida weather in January, that changes the dynamic.
Quick question, NFC related, where would you have the Saints? How far out of seven are they?
So Packers and Saints are 8 and 9 for me.
Okay. I have them at 10.
Yeah, they're right around that area, but I still kind of need to see more from the Saints as well. And I just have questions, you know, late season with Drew Brees that's going to matter. His arm strength, how is that going to hold up in January?
What, you mean it's a big deal that he can't pass for more than 10 yards?
Hey, he can do it in October. It's what happens in January. What happens?
I know, and
it's unfortunate because I was super high on the Saints. I think the team I've downgraded the most so far this year is probably the Dallas Cowboys, but second might be the Saints.
Oof. Woof.
Because the Saints defense hasn't been good. That's the thing. It's there's a lot of talent, but the Saints defense hasn't been good enough. And it's stripped away some of their luster.
Well, and their offense isn't doing enough to overcome their defensive struggles. Mm. And Michael Thomas, what's going on with that? Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
One problem after another.
Okay, let's pick Nazar, Katie Caldwell here on Football Central. We know you got your waivers today or tomorrow, depending on your league settings. Let's get to a couple of the depth chart looks, and maybe if you're looking to make some pickups on the Fantasy Wire, we can help you out there. In Seattle, they got a host of injuries. We kind of alluded to it a little bit. Chris Carson's got a midfoot sprain. He's going to be out. Carlos Hyde's picked up an injury as well. Travis Homer has a knee contusion, so he's picked it up. He's likely knocked out. When you go to the Seahawks depth chart, they literally have no other running backs aside from DJ Dallas. So they can't go to the practice squad and they're like, oh, you're on our main roster. You can play on Sunday. This is like the Seahawks. Even if the Seahawks sign somebody today, you've got to go through the COVID-19 protocols. Mm-hmm. And I think it's 4 or 5 days of proving you have negative tests. But you're not practicing. You're not with the team for those days. So it's not as if you can play on Sunday or at least have a meaningful role on Sunday. So it's basically incumbent on DJ Dallas to be the Seahawks running back.
So what you're telling me is behind DJ Dallas, they don't have another one.
God, you're the worst.
I know. Thank you.
Yes, that's quite literally what it is. Yes.
They are the running back version of what's happening at the quarterback in Dallas, where I think their backup to Ben DiNucci was a tight end. Isn't that amazing?
That's frightening. That's absolutely frightening. So not a lot of pro tape on DJ Dallas, but as we did, you know, pre-draft, when Jamie and Sat and I were doing the show, you know, we spent a lot of time looking at a lot of potential players because these situations do crop up, right? You get to your fourth or fifth string running back and everyone's scrambling. It's like, well, what's DJ Dallas look like? Well, thankfully we watched a lot of DJ Dallas tape in the preseason. I think he's an okay back. Actually, the guy I comped him to, which is really funny, is Thomas Rawls, who ended up obviously in Seattle and had a decent start to his career. That's just kind of a smaller guy with a good center of gravity. Not necessarily the cleanest runner at times. He's not great at changing direction and just an okay average burst. And he's got decent hands. But again, he's the guy. He can probably fill in for a week. But I don't know if I ever looked at him as a guy that could be a prominent role in an offense.
Are you talking right now in fantasy or are we talking on the field?
Both, to be honest, right? Like, I think he's fine to fill in for this week, but my expectations would be kind of muted.
Yeah, that's how I feel with it too. One thing I'm really happy about as all of the running backs seem to go down is that Pete is letting Russ cook and that happened before this happened.
Right.
Because we're relying way less on the run game, which that's always been Pete Carroll's thing. But now that Russ is actually cooking and did from game one, I think that's really, really great news in this situation where you virtually don't have a run game.
It's easier to do it the other way around. It's easier to use the pass instead of the run than it is to force feed someone a ball and get 2 yards of carry. And so like, all right, now let's pass. It's easier to do it that way. The other backfield that's interesting right now is the 49ers. We know Raheem Mostert's out for another couple of weeks. Jerick McKinnon didn't get a lot of touches last week. Jeff Wilson is now out as well. So that leaves a couple of names. And the guy to look at is Jamichael Hasty. Someone I was really high on coming out of the draft. Put like a round 4, round 3 grade on him coming out of Baylor. And another fortuitous comparison for me, I comped him to Devonta Freeman,
who
you'll remember in Atlanta under the Kyle Shanahan offense had good success. Kyle Shanahan now in San Francisco. I just thought this guy he's just a really smart running back. He's small. He's 5'8", 205, but he's really good running inside the tackles. And you've seen him use his vision pretty well, make some good decision-making behind the old line and when to press the O-line and when to cut. I think if he gets a bigger role, he to me is the guy who can be running back 2 in this offense behind Raheem Mostert when he returns. Mm-hmm. And he's so smooth. He's got a nice burst. The only way I can describe it, I wrote it in my notes all over the place. He just kind of glides across the field. And when you think of that offensive line, that outside zone, it's when can you pick a spot and change direction? He just has a way to just glide across cutback lanes.
I'll admit I didn't know a lot about him, but I watched a bit of tape on him this morning and I didn't know a lot, but I think we're about to. He looks like he could be a mega sleeper alert. And yeah. I saw the comparison with Freeman. I also saw more than one person compare him to a smaller Marshawn Lynch. And I'm going, oh, okay. Sure. And then I watched one play. Mm-hmm. He's not super big, like you said, but he is tough. And the way that he can run and then pick his route, he's a beast. Mm-hmm. I could see those Marshawn similarities for sure, but
like maybe not as much power, but the way I do see it is like he's got good contact balance,
right?
And obviously we know what Marshawn does with that. It's just like Hasty does a good job of like transferring his weight all the time, and he can like plant his foot, and even when he's getting pushed in a direction, he's taking hits from the side. He does a really good job of keeping his feet moving and just being compact and able to transfer his weight and also keep his hands active to keep bodies off of him as well. So if you're looking for someone that can maybe be a pop up on the a big game for you on Sunday, Jamichael Hasty is the guy I'm looking at for the 49ers. It's Bick Nizar, Katie Caldwell. We'll make way for Reach Deep coming up at 2:00. Josh Levo will join the show, newly signed for the Calgary Flames. Another one that has departed. That has departed the Vancouver Canucks, which we should also mention. The Canucks are doing a 50-50 this week, their $1 million 50-50 jackpot. The Canucks for Kids Fund, in partnership with the Canucks Autism Network, they are doing this 50-50 draw. It's expected to surpass $1 million. Proceeds go to help the Canucks Autism Network fundraising events that are either canceled or postponed due to the pandemic, including the Autism Network Pro-Am, Fishing for Kids Tournament, and the Ride for Autism. Tickets are available now, Canucks.com/online5050. They go through till November 2nd, so log on and buy your tickets. We'll be back tomorrow here on Football Central. Reach Deep on the way on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.